It is hour number three of Midday with Trey and BK. We are live from Final Four Radio Row in San Antonio, and it has been brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union, proud to serve the military. If you're a veteran or member of the Armed Forces, the Department of Defense, or your family is, Navy Federal Credit Union will be proud to serve you too. Federally insured by the NCUA. I am Trey Elling. He is Brad Kellner. Adam Wagner back in the studio. Coming up this hour, we're not totally sure, but at least at 12:10, we'll speak with Kyle Keller. He is the head coach over at SFA. The Lumberjacks faced Texas Tech in the first round of the tournament, and that was a close game, too, for the Red Raiders. And then we're also speaking with Jim Calhoun at 12:20. Really looking forward to that one, BK.
No doubt. Baseball's back. Apparently the first pitch of the season was a home run. Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs.
Wow.
Belt one out of there, so not a bad start for the 2016 World Series champs, and a pretty bad start, an expected bad start for the Miami. I got to call them the Miami Marlins. Derek Jeter has come in and just completely blown that thing up to shreds. And I've got my cousin. My cousin's making some calls right now. Baseball is back. I should be following Fat Jack's advice and saying, you know, if Pete Rose can't make money betting on baseball, there's no way I can. But that's not how it works. My cousin keeps calling. So we're taking a look.
I got to say, baseball is one of those weird sports where the best teams, yeah, they tend to win a majority of their games, but there are such flukish things that happen in baseball, more so than the other major sports, that I would be reluctant to put money on baseball, especially this early in the season before we truly know what teams are going to be.
Yeah.
Other than maybe the Astros sweeping the Rangers this weekend in Arlington.
I had a rough night last night. The cousin did. Bet on some NHL. That didn't work. And bet on the CIT, man. I've been rolling with Liberty. The Liberty Flames, but they got smashed.
The
last
CIT?
Night. Yeah, the CIT. Is that a problem?
Thankfully, there's not an L in that word.
Yes, thankfully, there's not an L in that word. Or, you know, replace the C. It's the lit. It's the lit tournament, as the kids are saying these days. Yeah, the Liberty Flames lost to the UIC Flames. UIC, what is that, Illinois, Chicago? What is it? I don't know. I'm not even going to go into this. We're not talking anymore CIT basketball.
Thank you for that.
This program. Welcome back, though. Yes, we are live down here, San Antonio at Radio Row. Thanks to Westwood One for having us out. A lot of fun, man. This is a huge, we're in the convention center in downtown San Antonio, if you're familiar. They've got all kinds of things going on. We've talked to some phenomenal guests already over our first 2 hours. I'll tell you what, there's credentials on the table by Radio Row for guys who are either coming later today or perhaps tomorrow. You've got some big-name players. I mean, DeAndre Ayton, you mentioned a little bit earlier. Marvin Bagley's got a credential, so he might be rolling through here. Even guys who are still in the tournament. I saw Devontae Graham. Devontae Graham might be making his rounds through as well. So it's the who's who of the college basketball world down here in the Alamo City. They've got a court, like a full court inside the convention center. I guess the Fan Fest stuff is going on as well. Trey, this is a pretty damn cool experience. I'm glad we're a part of this, and the fact that it's in our own backyard down I-35 is even cooler.
I'm enjoying it so far as well. Doug Gottlieb officially sitting down over at his microphone across the way. Like, I'm sure somebody would pay us right now to just go up and say something really mean to Doug Gottlieb because he said something really mean about their favorite player or favorite team.
It sounds like you want to do that right now.
So I don't want to
do
that,
but
I know
I'll get
how
it on
many
Facebook
people
Live.
Dis-
You'll probably lose your job, but it'll make for some pretty entertaining radio and Facebook content.
A lot of people consider him to be a more modern version of Skip Bayless right now, and that's what I understand with him. But, hey, look, I'm somebody who pisses people off on these airwaves from time to time. So
no,
I have
from time to time. It's on a daily basis.
Respect
what are you talking
to that
about?
Game. I mean, there's coaches here that we don't even totally recognize. The dude who's a table over at the Westwood One radio right now.
Dude, I know who that is.
I saw him on television in the last 2 weeks. I can't remember who it is, though.
I don't want to talk about it because it's just going to bother me. I don't know if there's a way to describe it, but I'll figure it out by the end of the segment, and I'll just yell it by the end of this thing. So we are here having a great time in San Antonio talking all things NCAA tournament, getting ready for the Final Four. And, of course, Kansas and Villanova, that's the late game on Saturday. Your first game, the surprises, the Cinderella, the 11 seed Loyola of Chicago will take on Michigan.
All right, joining us now at the table live from Radio Row in San Antonio, it's Kyle Keller, the head coach at Stephen F. Austin. The Lumberjacks made it to the tournament this year, lost to Texas Tech in a very hard-fought game in the first round. Kyle, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. What's up, guys?
Not a lot.
Not a whole lot, Coach. And look, I have to congratulate you on the job that you've done. And I know you're not in the business of hearing stuff like that, but I'll be honest, and a lot of people felt this way. Once Brad Underwood left SFA, the thought was, okay, well, they've had some success. over the last couple years down in Nacogdoches. What's going to happen next? You've come in there, and within 2 years, you've put the Lumberjacks back into the tournament. It seems to be a program on the rise once again. So well done.
Well, thank you very much. We've got a great, you know, and I hate to use this term because I think it's used so many, many ways. I'm not smart enough to come up with a different one, but we have a great culture.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you probably haven't heard that term today.
No, no coach has ever used that word ever. No,
so, unfortunately, I'm not an English major or come up with something new, but you know, it's a place that there's a great expectations of winning, and not just within our own locker room, but around town. And when you live in a college town like we do, everywhere you go, they expect you to win. And with that, you know, you just breeds it. Guys get in the gym, they do a little extra reps, you know, and you feel it from your student body, and it's fun. I mean, we have fun with it, and Brad left, and we signed 9 players last, you know, two springs ago, and
you signed 9 guys in a recruiting class.
8.
Wow.
Yeah, 8. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a JUCO guy.
Okay.
So I mean, that's nothing. 8's that's pretty easy.
Okay.
So. You know, and we finished second that first year, and then, you know, we're able to add a couple of pieces that next year. And, you know, we got 28 this year. So I wish we could say, hey, we're going to win 10 more the following year and get to 38, but I don't think that's going to happen.
You'd be right here now. You wouldn't
be
talking to us.
I'd be coaching again in the Final Four.
Yes, sir.
Look, clearly you're going to the JUCO ranks to try and bring guys aboard.
Not that much.
Okay, not that much. It was just that 1 year to try and.
We signed a couple of JUCOs that first year, but I really like high school guys. I think that's how you build a base and your classes. You know, even out. We signed a couple of JUCO guys that first year, and we signed one last year, too.
So what was the most difficult thing in transitioning into a program that had seen successes the 2 previous years with Brad Underwood and trying to instill your own system in place?
A lot. You know, we don't have enough time to go through it all, but you know, I've worked for great people. I had 3 guys that I worked for, coached this last weekend, you know, Leonard Hamilton of Florida State, you know, obviously Bill Self, who's playing this weekend, and then, you know, Billy Kennedy, who at A&M. And you take and then the godfather, Eddie Sutton, you know, at Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
So I've learned from great people. If I just, you know, just ooze a little bit out that they tell me, and I was able to sit and learn from them, you know, it's hard not to win. And then we had 3 or 4 holdovers that played for Coach Underwood that their will and determination to win is at a high, high level.
Coach, you have a lot of talent coming back. Your 3 leading scorers in Bogues, Holyfield, and Harris all coming back next year. What are the expectations for this team? I mean, you mentioned it. You guys, 28 wins this year. You finished 3rd in the regular season in the Southland Conference. But
one game out of first.
Won the tournament. Yeah, which is weird because last year y'all were, what, 12-6 in conference play?
In second.
Finished second. So a different year. But what
our league was better this year.
What are the expectations, I guess, for the league and then for you guys? Is the goal next year to come out on top in the regular season?
Yeah, we at our place – because we're a one-bid league, we talk about winning the conference tournament.
Yes, sir.
That's all we talk about is winning the conference tournament. So, you know, and I hate to use this term, but our guys, for lack of a better term, we got bored during the regular season. You know, we had some great non-conference wins. We went to La Tech, who was 84-4 at that time, and won in Ruston, which may not mean much to people in Austin. But it's a great deal for us because nobody ever goes over there and wins. I mean, we have the best home court record in the last 5 years at our place. So it would be like coming to our place and winning a game like UAB did last year. And they beat us at our place. And so it's a huge win for us to go to La Tech. And we Mississippi State beat us 3 or 5, but it came down in the last 30 seconds. We go to LSU and beat LSU.
Right.
You know, went to Missouri. We had the ball down 1 with 15 seconds left, and we lose there. Zoe comes into our locker room after the game. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. And tells our team how hard they play and all that kind of stuff, which is great on his part. I've never had that happen. I didn't know how to handle it because I was pissed. And we got guys crying. I'm crying. And, you know, I mean, telling our guys how hard they play. You know, and I'm like, I know how hard we play. But, I mean, it's a great gesture on his part.
Yeah.
But I don't need that. Our players don't need that. But it was great on his part that he wanted to do that.
So that's something that you wished had not happened?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I thought it was great that he felt compelled to do that.
Right. Okay. All right. Talking.
But we got bored in the league. If that makes sense.
Sure. That's totally
understood. But the last 6 weeks of the league,
right.
month of the league, our average margin of a lead at half was like 21, 22 points.
Right. Talking to Kyle Keller right now, head coach at SFA. And Kyle, you grew up in the Metroplex. You went to Oklahoma State and played baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Did your coaching career start with you thinking that you might be a baseball coach?
Never.
What led to the transition of you actually wanting to get in basketball instead?
Three knee surgeries in high school. You know, unfortunately, I'm not the quickest cat after those. I was a starter, 3-year starter in high school basketball, but I just didn't have the athleticism or quickness to play college basketball.
But you always felt like you saw the game of basketball better than baseball?
My high school coach probably wouldn't say that, but I did. I got some recruiting letters when I was a sophomore, but I could never translate it to the highest level. But I could always hit.
Yeah.
And I was bored. Baseball bored me. And I was a catcher, and after getting hurt, I had to move from, I got out of the action. So I'd stand in the outfield and just work on my swing.
Right.
And hope the ball would never be hit to me. Because I was scared to catch the pop fly. I have to run, and where am I going to throw it to? Because I'm engaged in something, my swing. If I'm in and out, I'd be so mad. Thinking about how can I get back up there? And then back when I was playing back in the 80s, they start throwing the split finger pass fastball. And that was the death of my hitting, was this – was a split finger, and I could hit everything else but that one. And when I got to college,
yeah, coach, I couldn't hit a curve, so fastball was all that I had.
Yeah, you wanted the old number one. I got you.
Yeah, coach, I got to ask you, and this is an interesting point. You talked about your guys getting a little bored during the conference schedule, and it's almost impossible not to with this landscape in college basketball these days. Let's use Middle Tennessee State as an example. That's a team, to me, should have been a lock to make the NCAA tournament.
St. Mary's.
Because St. Mary's, exactly. But because they didn't win their conference tournaments and get that automatic bid, they don't find their way dancing. Look at a team like Loyola of Chicago, right? If they don't win the Missouri Valley, they're not dancing at all, and forget the Cinderella run. Are you scared that, I mean, it's already happening, but are you scared that it's going to get even worse to where the selection committee for the NCAA tournament just completely ignores the mid-major?
Well, I spent 18 years in the Power Five, so it all depends on what side of the line you're on.
Yeah.
And because you want to get those bids if you feel like you're paying the money to get in that. And it's a great question to ask, because when you're on where I'm at, you know the pressure that you're underperform. And we're up 14 or 15 in our conference tournament final. We're rolling, and then all of a sudden we play a tentative. And we become the hunter again, which is what we were. We were the hunted all conference season because of what we don't pick to win the league, and we get everybody's best shot every night. And we have our arena. Everybody comes in our arena. We led our league by 4,000 in attendance almost.
Nice.
And we go to some gyms and we're counting how many are in there,
You're counting 400 as you go to some of these other gyms, right?
And so we have to recruit the right kind of kid that's okay to play in that, but also is okay to go to Missouri and play in front of 14,000, too.
Yes, interesting. Kyle Keller joining us right now, SFA head coach. Kyle, the NCAA is considering a number of rule changes after this season is over with to be implemented in 2018-19. Is there one rule change that you're hoping for above the others, whether it's an alteration of the one-and-done rule, the easing of the transfer rules? Is there something that you'd like to see done differently as a coach at a mid-major right now?
Well, I don't want them to transfer and be able to play immediately, but that's going to happen. And at least I hope they put some academic component, because all of my recruiting, they're going to come and figure out they're going to recruit my best players.
Right.
Why is that such a foregone conclusion? It seems like enough people are against it that there would be a lot of blowback, because all it does is hurt the mid-majors that help make this time of year such a compelling story.
I think it's because in every other sport you can do it. And besides football and basketball. And so they have those in the other sports, not all of them, but a majority of them. So they're worried about the legal ramifications because of it. At least that's what I've been told. Because I don't know many coaches that are for it, to be honest with you.
Coach, you spent, 5 or 6 years in College Station? And
our
station's based out of Austin, Texas. We got a lot of A&M fans who listen to this program. What was your time like under Billy Kennedy? You said you learned a lot from him. What was your time in College Station like?
Coach Kennedy's a dear friend of mine, and he is a special, special man. He is a rock. I learned so much from him, not just on the basketball court, but how to treat people and treat people right. He is, as a coach, he is the same way every day. And I think I learned as much about that, besides the X's and O's, the genius of him as an X's and O's, but how to run a program. and from and building. He helped me coming in there, being able to talking about recruiting eight guys and doing the same thing every day and not getting too emotional, not get up and down. You look at when they lost four or five or whatever they did this year, we did the same thing the year we went to Sweet 16. And I told him, I said, Coach, you're the one guy that can do this right. and have a special year because you're experienced in it. He's been Coach of the Year in three different leagues, and he's just a man of faith, not unabashed about sharing his Christian faith, and God knows his story, and just a tough dude.
You mentioned how much time you spent around Eddie Sutton with the Oklahoma State basketball program. He's one of my favorite characters in the history of Big 12 basketball. Any stories that come to mind when thinking about Coach Sutton? And also, do you still speak with him now?
You know, I haven't talked to Coach in a while. I've tried to, you know, try to reach out to him. He's not in the best health,
okay.
You know, unfortunately,
at 82, Coach. It's understandable.
Yeah. And but I'll tell you this story real quickly. When we played Tech and his middle son, Sean, who took over for Coach at Oklahoma State, I ran his favorite play in the first possession against Texas Tech to honor Coach Sutton.
Oh, how about
because
very
I knew
cool.
he'd be watching. It's not even our playbook, but I put it in the day before in shoot around to honor Coach because I knew he'd be watching the game just to kind of let him know I'm still thinking about him.
Awesome. That's
and,
awesome.
But he, you know, Coach Sutton, he's just like Coach Self in that he could get on a young man and just be so hard on him. And then within 15 seconds, he'd walk up to him and put his arm around him and whisper in their ear. And they'd just watch the kid just exhale and just lift up.
Body language just completely change.
And the kid would want to try so hard for Coach.
That's awesome.
And to me, those are the things I tried to take from Coach Sutton. And I use this with our players. I'm going to coach you very, very hard. But I'm going to hug you twice as hard as I do coach you.
Oh, that's awesome. It's a great mantra right there. Coach, we appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Enjoying your work at SFA and enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No doubt.
Kyle.
There he goes. Coach Kyle Keller, head coach of Stephen F. Austin State University down in Nacogdoches. Man, been an assistant under Sutton, as you mentioned. Been an assistant under Billy Kennedy. Been an assistant coach under Bill Self. He's been through the coaching rankings, now getting the chance, his first head coaching job at the collegiate level, at the non-JUCO level. He coached at Tyler JC a little bit back in the day, but now at SFA, been there for a couple of years. And in a second or so, we'll be joined by another legendary head coach.
Legend.
Looking forward to this conversation. We're talking Hall of Fame right here. We are talking Hall of Fame right here, and we've got Jim Calhoun. Long time college basketball head coach representing Coaches versus Cancer, which, of course, is a collaboration between the American Cancer Society and the National Association of Basketball Coaches that empowers coaches, their teams, and communities to join together to save lives from cancer. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I haven't lost a game in 5 years, and that's always a good thing.
Course, you're undefeated in 5 years,
I'm
huh?
Undefeated. Unfortunately, I haven't won a game either, so that's a good thing.
How has it been being out of the coaching game? You were a coach for so long, and it has to be such a lifestyle change going from the nonstop grind of recruiting and being on the sidelines to just, I don't want to say you're out of the game altogether because I know you're still heavily involved and keep up with it, but what's the transition into retirement been like for you?
Well, for the past 5 years, I was at ESPN, covered the Big Ten,
yes, sir.
30, 35 games a year, so, you know, I'm still watching the thing and going to practices, shoot arounds, et cetera, and... I was consulting, still am at UConn, so I was involved there, and we just started a Division III program, a 94-year-old school, St. Joseph's in West Hartford, Connecticut. We started a basketball program.
Oh, nice.
It was a school that's going co-ed now, and we've got eight commitments already.
There you go.
Financial aid commitments. But more importantly, I missed the game, and that's why I'm going back on a different level and a different pace, but the game is the game.
Now, you really brought the UConn program out from nowhere back in the day. So what is the biggest challenge that you could not necessarily foresee in trying to get a program started flat out at a school like you're doing now?
Well, you know, it is. Financial aid at Division III is entirely different. I can't go in and say, Jesus, guys, you're a real good point guard. Okay. But with that said, you know, how am I going to pay to go to school? So, you know, if you're a terrific student, we can give you academic scholarships. If you're a needy, we can. But in between is very difficult. But bottom line is you recruit who you recruit. You find the kids that will fit your program. And you know what? There's tens of thousands of kids playing basketball every year. There's some pretty good ones out there.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Coach, tell us a little bit about Coaches versus Cancer. I see the TV commercials all the time with you, seeing Bo Ryan walk around, guys like Roy Williams and Lon Kruger. Tell us a little bit about the initiative and what you guys are trying to do.
Yeah, about 26 years ago, Norm Stewart from Missouri was contacted with cancer diagnosed, and I joined the club and just kind of like, let's try to help out. Really, that simple.
Yes, sir.
It evolved into Coach versus Cancer, and little did I know that I'd be a three-time cancer survivor since. I'd never had any idea. You know, I suppose we hadn't won three championships either, but all those things kind of happen in your life. And, you know, so I speak maybe from a little different vantage point. When I coach the group of cancer survivors today at the practice, the Heroes of the Hardwood, when they talk about chemotherapy, when they talk about radiation, we have a bond. So I know, and you know, I think it's good if you can, you know, for a lot of years I had the microphone at UConn, and I had the microphone where many other folks didn't. And so I was able to speak for those who couldn't be heard. And I keep telling folks that, you know, one of the great things in my life, I have something called, we're ready to raise about, I think, $10 million, $11 million at UConn for the Calhoun Cardiology Center.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it is so such a great feedback for me. To watch what the $110 million we've raised for Coach versus Cancer, it's incredible. The joy that we get for doing that and fighting that monster cancer is very special. And for me now, it's not only special, but very personal.
Very cool. Joined right now by Hall of Fame coach Jim Calhoun, formerly, of course, of the UConn Huskies. Now he makes the rounds speaking for great causes like Coaches versus Cancer, as well as working for ESPN, covering a variety of different basketball games. And, Coach, I'm reading one of your former players' books right now, Ray Allen, and he has very kind things to say about you and just the sincerity and just how genuine you were as a person. When you think back to coaching Ray Allen in the mid-1990s, and he was really one of those guys, along with Donyell Marshall, Donnie Marshall, who helped elevate you guys to what was eventually a national championship. What are some of your favorite things to think about with Ray Allen? And did you see back then that he was going to be a star at the next level?
Well, special guy, special athlete. When I saw him in Hillcrest High School in Dalzell, South Carolina, he was an Air Force brat. Had been in London, had been in California, Arkansas, and then Dalzell. And I went and saw him, loved him as a player. I saw him score 62 in a summer league game against Riverside Church, the old AU power, without a three-point shot. He was not a three-point shooter when he came to UConn.
Huh.
So one day in practice, freshman year, he walking off, and I said, hey, where are you going? He said, well, I'm going to go over here. We're going to the movies. I said, great. I said, by the way, just curiosity, did you shoot 100% today? He looked like I had three heads.
Right.
I said, no, I'm just a curiosity question, right? Did you shoot 100% today? He kind of looked at me again, and I said, finally, well, no big deal. I walked away. He went back and shot for half an hour that day, and he says, and I believe him, knowing him, that he never left the practice without shooting for half an hour afterwards and an hour before. His legendary shooting, the greatest three-point shooter thus far in history, did he shoot 100% today? It really reacted. I knew it wasn't trying to be better than everybody else. It was trying to be special in your own right.
How about that?
And he turned special in his own right.
Man, I mean, for me, just a scrub high school player that I was, if I could make like five threes in a row, that was the end of practice for me. That is hilarious. Coach, of course, you're a legend, a Hall of Famer. UConn, the former school that you coach, going through some tough times, of course, a coaching change right now, and you mentioned that you're still a part of some of the committees and the decision-making going on right there. What do you think has changed? Of course, this program, even after you left, won a national championship with a lot of your players, but what's going on with UConn, and how close do you think they are to being back to a national power once again?
Well, you know, when Kevin Ollie took over, he did a terrific job, no question. Second year then, he won a national championship, as you mentioned, terrific defensive coach, and then we fell off the track. You know, people in life, you can fall off the track. It happens. I wanted Kevin to get the job, and I certainly didn't want him out of a job, but it's a business. I had nothing to do with him being out of a job, trust me. But most importantly, Kevin will be fine. He'll go on and do some great things. The things he didn't do well, he'll learn from, and the things he did well, he'll keep. Most importantly, we're going forward, and that's what life is. And I think Danny Hurley would do a great job, former Rhode Island coach. We're excited, and I'm going to continue the rest of my life to root for UConn. And I think that we're going to be just fine.
Totally understandable. Joined for a couple more minutes by Hall of Fame coach Jim Calhoun. And, Coach, the NCAA is going to make some changes to college basketball after this season. What would you like to see done, if anything, with the one-and-done rule?
Well, the one-and-done is giving you an idea that a lot of schools, and this goes back almost 10, 12 years when George Mason beat us, because teams are hard to be veteran teams. And so you don't get it. When we had Okafor, Gordon, second and third in the draft, and four other guys who played first-round draft choices, six right. NBA draft choices.
Yep.
You don't get that anymore. You get them, they're freshmen. Those guys are all sophomores and juniors. And my point being, those kind of teams are going to continue to win. And secondly, our fans can't identify with the game when a kid comes in for 8 months. It's, you know, we need direction, and hopefully the NCAA, and particularly, I mean this honestly, the NBA has got to give us help. I think, no question, kid has got to come for at least 2 years. And I just think the game, we've got to make sure that the game of basketball, which is the greatest thing, in my opinion, greatest game in the world, we've got to make sure that we put an incredible product, and the kids get, they get so much. I keep hearing what they don't get at schools. They get incredible. I hate to say even by osmosis, but being in a disciplined program, attending classes, study halls, responsibilities, those are all incredibly important things that we've got to do to our game.
Would you like to see some sort of compensation figured out just in terms of name and likeness, maybe after their eligibility is over with, if they get their college degrees?
I don't think there's any question about that. I always felt if you put the money aside during that particular point in time, it would be great. I mean, some of our kids, you know, the idea I can't pay for my own jersey, not so much true. These kids get, you know, they also get now $5,000 Pell Grant if you're a full qualifier,
sure.
$5,000 expenses for colleges, $10,000. So that's more money than I had in college, for
yes,
sure.
Sir.
All
yep.
of us, probably. But
yep.
more importantly, but putting that money aside and their likeness when their eligibility is over, that's great. I mean, we're America, and you know, entrepreneurship is a good thing. And I think it would keep it much cleaner and much better than what it is now. But one thing I should tell you, don't be deceived by 25, 30 programs going into the black as opposed to staying in the white.
Right.
And just don't be deceived by that. There are an incredible amount, Loyola being one of them, Villanova being another one, Michigan, John Bielan, real good friend, being another one, Kansas. My point is, there's a lot of great stories out there every day, and that's why you guys are here.
Cool. Coach, one last question before we let you go, and we appreciate your time. We've got to ask you. Look, nobody knows basketball more than you do. No one knows the college game more than you do. Who wins this weekend? You've got any predictions, any thoughts on who cuts down the nets come Monday night?
2 years ago, my friend Barack Obama, because I do a lot in the Democratic Party and so on, asked
my
me who's going to win.
Yeah,
Obama.
My friend Obama.
Yeah, it's a good drop. But at that level.
Sure.
Coach, who's going to win it? Michigan State. That's the year they lost the first one last year.
Right, to Tennessee, right?
Nice.
He sent me an email after that, by the way. So I may be the wrong guy. I'm picking Villanova.
Okay.
I think they're the best team. Brunson is a difference maker.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Coach, we really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. We'll continue to promote Coaches versus Cancer, and we appreciate all that you're doing both on and off the court. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, it's more from Midday with Trey and BK right here live from Radio Row in San Antonio on the Horn. Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, live from Westwood One's NCAA Final Four Radio Row, and that is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union is proud to serve the military. If you're a veteran or member of the armed forces, the Department of Defense, or your family is, Navy Federal Credit Union would be proud to serve you too. Federally insured by the NCUA. BK?
Yeah, welcome back. Having a great time. Just had some fun conversations right there.
Kyle Calhoun,
head coach of SFA, and of course the Hall of Famer, the legendary Jim Calhoun, three-time national champion, just joined us talking all things college basketball. He, like me, likes Villanova to be cutting down the nets come Monday
yep.
night. I'm with him, man. Jalen Brunson, that dude is just a difference maker on both ends of the floor. We're excited, though. We'll be here tomorrow with a lot more great guests coming. And we do have one more guest coming up, Saul Phillips, the head coach at Ohio U, the Ohio Bobcats. Look, they had a rough year. They didn't make the tournament or anything this season. But we've been told by a couple of different people that he is a hoot. He is one of the best interviews we will have all week, is what we've been told. So we're excited for that conversation as well. If you missed any of our great interviews, Clark Kellogg came on to start the program. We talked to Illinois head coach Brad Underwood, amongst many, many others. We've got a little history lesson from a couple of Alamo historians.
George Washington Carver joined the show.
No,
a little
that
bit
did
earlier.
Not happen. George Washington or George Washington Carver did not join the program. Not sure if there's any relation with those two. We talked a little baseball, of course, a little Texas basketball, but right now, because we have sponsors that we have to hit,
that's
let's,
true.
Let's fire up a little bit of a Shooting the Bull.
Shooting the Bull.
Do we have like a marching band or something going on here?
What am I hearing right now?
I don't know. Everybody on Radio Row is just looking around like, what the hell is this? I think it's done. Sorry if y'all heard that. That was something going on right
there. Wow, that was strange.
All right, so Shooting the Bulls brought to you by AV Consultations. Tom McKay, AV Consultations, locally owned and operated for 30 years in Central Texas, giving you the best. When you want the home of your dreams, that custom-made, custom-designed, custom-installed audiovisual automation system for your home, four TVs in the living room, surround sound, the media room, whatever, AV Consultations can take care of you. 255-8678. We'll go to avconsultations.com. Trey.
Yeah, real quick recap before we get to your one Shooting the Bull story, because we're actually going to take both our breaks left over in this hour before we get to 12:50 when we speak with Saul Phillips of Ohio University. I called my buddy after the show yesterday, the one whose son told I would pay $20 to spray with ketchup. Ended up not paying them $20. He's still ticked off, said at the very least I needed to call his wife to explain the situation to her. Did so last night, broke down, actually cried. Had to talk to the six-year-old as well.
You cried?
Apologized to him as well. It's an emotional thing for me, man. I realized the mistake that I made and that it could cost me a friendship and how much strife it caused within his family. So I cried. I apologized. I took total blame for this because total blame should be on me.
And total then they blame, let me know. Primary care, the doctor's office, just... Nope.
Yeah.
All right. Carry on.
Something like that. And then they let the cat out of the bag. They told me that they were actually told by mutual friends who were also at the dinner later that Saturday night what had happened and that they've been messing with me since then, too. So they get the last laugh in this whole situation. I'm still a jerk.
Yep.
But considering not paying the kid the
$20
now.
You got to pay the kid the $20. He still got poshed. Even though the soap in the mouth didn't happen, he still got a public spanking because of you. He deserves some cash.
That kid's a little punk, let me tell
you. Come
on. That kid is a little punk.
You're encouraging the punkness.
And it's why I instigated the whole ketchup incident to begin with. I'm still going to pay him the
$20. You're going to call this man's kid a punk after all of this, after all that's happened? Have you not learned your lesson?
No, I really love Henry and love Chris and Janina as well, so I'm glad it wasn't worse because I thought it went down a terrible path that I could have stopped had I just intervened to begin with. And fortunately, yeah, the public spanking wasn't good, but it didn't lead to marital strife and also the kid getting a bar of soap in his mouth for 3 days.
Dude, they got you good. They got me good. That was some of the funniest radio I've ever been a part of. Also, maybe the most cringeworthy radio that we've ever had.
That's what it was for me. It certainly wasn't funny at the time.
Oh, I had a great time. Maybe the most cringeworthy radio we've had on our 206 episodes of Midday with Trey and BK. Do we have time for a story? I don't know what our break schedule is. Wait, what are we doing? Are we combining breaks here?
Going to break. We'll see how long these breaks are. They may be combined and coming up at 12:50. We have a guest.
All right, we are taking a break. We got a guest coming up to wrap up our coverage live from San Antonio Radio Row. Thanks to Westwood One. Of course, thanks to our friends at The Horn for getting us down here. We'll be here, of course, tomorrow. And one more segment to go of Midday with Trey and BK live from the Alamo City right here on The Horn.
Back here on the Midday Show, one more segment before we're done for the day, live from NCAA Final Four Radio Row. Thank you very much to Westwood One for setting all of this up. And we're pleased to be joined right now by Saul Phillips. He is the head basketball coach of the Ohio Bobcats. Saul, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today, man?
Great to be here. We're doing really good, and I've got a hotel room that overlooks the free concerts.
Okay.
So I'm going to be – it's going to look like Woodstock out there because it is muddy. So I'm going to have like a 20th floor view of just muddy mess tonight.
Now, you're bringing the Woodstock up to your room? Like, are we going up there to party a little bit?
Well, you can come on up, but it's going to be a little – you're going to have to shower. I don't bring that mud into my room.
Saul, is this your first time in San Antonio? Have you been around the Final Four before? And if so, how does what you've been through so far today compare to everything else?
Boy, I think this is my third time in San Antonio. Okay. My NABC membership card says 23 years now, which, I mean, I look at it, I'm 45 years old. Half my life I've been coming to these, and how lucky is that? But this is probably the best venue for Final Four in terms of just proximity to everything.
Right.
The Riverwalk is a terrific setup. And then, obviously, the proximity to the arena, too. I mean, everything's so compact here, and the weather's agreeable, and I get to get out golf a little bit. So it's everything's good. They could have it here every year. I'd be happy.
Cool.
No doubt. Coach, a little bit of a disappointing season for you guys at Ohio U. You've been there for 4 years now, and you guys have had a pretty successful run while you've been the head coach. What do you think went wrong a little bit this year, and what do you think can go right and get right at this offseason for next year?
Well, we got beat up this year early on. We lost potential player of the year in the league with a stress fracture before the season started. And fought hard. We you take the best player off any team, and it ain't going to go the way you want it to go. However, the good news is that really the big thing we have to improve on is our health. And the kid's cleared to play as of a couple days ago, and I got a couple more guys that got banged up that are going to be healthy. Within the week after the season got over, we had four surgeries on our roster.
How about that?
So our healthy people were hurt, and that's never good. So I've got to get a medicine man to come in and do his thing around our locker room. We do that, we'll be fine. We'll be back here in one of these bad boys.
So you got into a little bit of trouble a few years ago after you played Tulsa. You were making a comment about how many seniors they had on the team, and you said something very tongue-in-cheek that, of course, this hypersensitive media took and ran with and assumed something else. One, that was ridiculous, but the point of me asking that question is that we're at a crossroads in college basketball right now where it seems like something needs to be done a little bit differently to ensure that a lot of these guys who give their blood, sweat, and tears for this sport that so many of us love so much need to maybe be compensated down the road. Would you like to see something done differently in terms of helping to compensate these guys for names and likeness maybe once their college career is over with or once they get their degrees?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's any coach out there that cares about his kids that wouldn't want their kids to have more. So, I mean, that people like nobody wants to pay these guys, but no, we'd all love to. The problem is finding a model that works. And yeah. The components that factor into that are deeper than it. It's not as easy as saying, all right, men's basketball players can make money off their likeness. Who in college basketball can actually make money off their likeness? I'm here to tell you, on my team, not many. Now, on Kentucky, yes.
Right.
Could Mo Bamba? Yes. You know, there are certain players that can. But we're dealing with 350-some teams. And so you start paying players, okay, what about Title IX? What women's players are you going to pay? Because you got to pay some or you're going to get sued. There are all kinds of things. If there was an easy solution, it would have been done by now. The problem we have is we've got a bunch of smart people looking at it that it's more difficult than one easy fix. Would I like to see players be able to make money? Yes, everybody would. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But to make a plan that actually works, most schools are funded. Their basketball programs, football programs are funded a good deal by student fees. So basically, if you're going to pay players, you're taking money from other students and giving them to your students.
Interesting.
That people don't look at it that way.
Right.
And I don't know. We're at a real tipping point. I do know this. There needs to be change. We all recognize there needs to be change. What we do know is that we still have a great product on the court, as evidenced by this tournament, which I could have watched year-round. I mean, it's been unbelievable. That's what we have that's positive. How do we find the best way to take care of everybody involved in it and still stay within the parameters of what colleges can do? Because I'll tell you what, without Maryland, Baltimore County in this tournament, it's not as exciting.
Right.
And you can't tell me that any of those players coming into that game were generating enough money for the program to justify paying them.
That's a very fair point.
Yeah, so, now you got guys like Jarius Lyle. It's like a household name.
Yeah.
You win one game like that.
Exactly.
So would you have a solution? I mean, obviously you talked about it being possible. But if you were in charge, if you were given the decision for compensating players or dealing with this issue, have you thought about something that maybe you would do?
Yeah, but it always gets more complicated
right.
than that. I don't have time to sit down and analyze this. Like, hopefully this committee on college basketball gets a little deeper into it and can figure some things out. I know this. It's going to take somebody a lot smarter than me to solve the problems that we have. What you don't want to see is everything to crumble down because, again, I can't think of a better month of the year sports-wise than we just had. So it's a delicate balance. But I do know this. Part of the solution is offering kids other options than college. So increased G League, increased... If you really don't want to be in college, why the heck are we making them go? It makes it like, listen, if I bring a kid in that doesn't want to be in college, that kid's still going to class and is still dealing with the professors that I work with, right? And if I put a kid in their class that doesn't want to be there, that doesn't show up, that's going to strain my relationship with them.
Right, absolutely.
So let's stop that farce by whatever way we can. And we're going to need some help from the NBA to do it. And we don't control what the NBA does. So
another rule that the NCAA committee, competition committee, is considering instituting after the year, and something that it feels like pretty much every coach has accepted is going to become a reality before next season, is the transfer rule. Are you for or against the relaxing of this transfer rule?
I am strongly against just being able to go wherever you want.
Every coach is against that. Why is it going to pass so easily?
Fear of lawsuits.
God, man.
That's where we're at. Man. I mean, let's just call it what it is. I will say this. I don't understand why we can't get to the point where we realize anybody can transfer wherever they want, but they sit 1 year. That proves that they wanted to go there, and it gives them a chance to make up the credits that they would. That's the easy solution with grad transfers, with everybody. This grad transfer thing, kids go there, they go to class until they're done playing. They could quit school and hold a full-time job on the side. So
in that second semester, you're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's I know it's fairy tale to make it student athlete, you know, everything, but that's what we got to be focused on if we're really serious about having a collegiate sports model.
Yeah.
I mean, it is.
Yeah, Coach, we're making you use your brain too much, man. You're not.
Yeah, what the heck?
Enough. I'm sorry.
A little more lighthearted
than
this.
We're going off the rails. So, okay, the off season for you now, coaches will say, well, never an off season, right? Recruiting is a 365-day-a-year type of thing. You're always looking for ways to improve your team. But when you are not coaching, when you're not doing things, what do? You watch shows, you watch movies, you vacation. What are your plans for the off season?
Well, I've got three kids.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you what, the third one derailed everything. If you're out there and you're thinking about having a third, I love my third to death. He's actually a mini me, which is a problem. He gets in the same kind of trouble I used to get into. That's a problem.
Yep.
I look at my wife and say, yeah, that's my bad. But that takes up a lot of my time. I just love basketball. I mean, I still watch tape in the off season. I'm a pretty two-dimensional guy. I got family and I got basketball. That's about it. So I hate to say it. It's not like I ice sculpt or something exciting
right.
like that.
You watch the NBA too, or you just stick to
college
game?
Mostly.
Okay.
I'll watch a little NBA, and I've been fortunate to bump across some paths with some kids that still play, men that still play in the NBA, and that interests me. And obviously in Ohio, you're always watching the Cavs and their drama. But I pitch in my son's coach pitch team once in a while.
Oh, cool.
Do stuff like that.
There you go. Well, Coach, we appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much for coming out, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you soon, all right?
Boy, this got deep. Brain food for your audience today. Yeah.
That's what we do.
Enjoy the Woodstock tonight.
All right.
All right, take care. There you go. Saul Phillips, head basketball coach at Ohio U, and we are out of time. We got to go. Well, Rodcast coming up next. Chad and Kevin, we'll be back to do it again tomorrow from San Antonio. Have a great afternoon.